From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Hello, Denise.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm dreading the question you're about to ask me.
Well, then I think we should just rip the Band-Aid off and ask it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, Dan.
Okay.
Our show today is about purpose, and here is my question to you. What, Dan Schwartz, is your purpose in life?
So I have to admit I'm pretty existential, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So I do think I have some guiding values that, you know, I want to help people. But in terms of like purpose, like I want to land a man on the moon kind of purpose, I'm more, we had a faculty member named John Crumbolt, who was counseling psychology, but also sort of vocational. And he had a theory called happenstance theory. And it's a very optimistic theory. It's basically if you work hard and put yourself in a position, the environment around you will create opportunities and you can pursue them. And so I've been kind of lucky that way. So I'm the dean of an education school. I must have some purpose, but I sort of just don't reflect on it very much.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's like a vision statement, you know. Sorry. I've left Denise stunned.
I don't know how it's like a vision statement.
So here's a better answer.
Okay.
When I look backwards, I have purpose.
Okay. Tell me about that. What does that mean?
When I look backwards, somehow I'm able to make the thread that I must have had this purpose, which led me here. And then I can construct the story looking backwards. It's like we did a study once. This is really tangential. But we did a study once where we gave people an astrology prediction. And we'd say, look, this is for your sign, Gemini, or whatever. And we'd either give it to them in the morning or the night. And we'd ask them, how true is this for your day? And in the morning, they'd sort of rate it as a 2, which is very low. And at night, they rate it as like a 4, which is very high. So basically, once it's happened, I can look backwards and make sense of it.
And you could say, aha,
yeah.
That's my purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
I was meant to be the dean of an ed school.
I don't know. I'm not sure that's what purpose is. I don't know if purpose is a role.
Yeah.
But we're going to find out.
Yes,
because
we are
talking to Bill Damon. He's a professor of education at Stanford. He's also the director of the Stanford Center on Adolescence. And Bill is really sort of groundbreaking. Before everybody got interested in growth mindset and different things that drive people forward, he was looking at character and how character shapes the kinds of directions that people take. Even before that, he was looking at moral reasoning in young children. And now he's looking at a sense of purpose. And he explores how young people develop purpose in their civic work, family, and community relations. He examines how people learn to approach their vocational and civic lives with a focus on purpose and high standards of excellence. So, Bill, thank you for coming.
Well, thanks, Dan. I'm glad to be here.
So, Bill, what is your purpose?
Oh, that's so not nice.
Well, first of all, when I talk and write about purpose, I usually use the plural because all of us have more than one purpose, especially if we are mature adults. If we have families, family is almost certainly a purpose, our children. Our work, if we care at all about our vocation and are determined to do a socially responsible job and accomplish something, that's going to be a purpose. A lot of us have faith purposes. A lot of us have civic purposes. So it isn't singular. And I will say also, Dan, that it's not a capital P, meaning that you don't have to want to send somebody to the moon to have a purpose. It can be quite ordinary. It can be something as simple as, you know, I'd sort of like to see that my child become well-educated, learn to read, be healthy, and I'm going to stick with that for the long term and do it.
Okay, wait. I can answer now. So my purpose is teaching. I really like teaching. I really like to help people learn. So there you go.
Does that work, Bill?
Oh, absolutely. Teachers, at least teachers that think of their job as a calling rather than just a paycheck, have very important purposes. Everybody that works, I mean, the whole idea of a calling goes way back. And it's whatever you do, if you sweep streets, if you are a doctor, a lawyer, Indian chief, plumber, you name it, if you care about what you do and you're trying to accomplish something, you have a purpose.
So what is the big deal about purpose? What's the purpose of purpose? Why are you spending all this time studying it?
Well, we've learned that purpose is associated with lots of personal goods and public goods. Personally, it's associated with health, with motivation, with energy, resilience. And generally, it's not only good for you, it's good for the world, because people who have purposes tend to accomplish things that mean a lot to other people, too. So it is a big deal. And those of us who are in the field of education care a lot about whether students are motivated to learn. Motivation is a big concept in education, and purpose is right at the heart of that.
So I'm a parent. I would like, or more generally, I would like to develop a sense of purpose. It is, if I understand correctly, it's for you, it's not a calling. It's actually something that one can cultivate. To develop a purpose. And
well, right, we're not born with purposes. They don't suddenly drop on us from the sky. And in fact, I'll tell you, one of the interesting things that we have found is that purpose is one of the latest developing capacities of anything I've studied. And I studied a lot of capacities as a developmental psychologist, and almost everything grows rapidly between, say, the ages of 10 and 20. Anything you can look at improves in those years. But we don't find a lot of movement in purpose, some. But the real movement takes place after that. And so it's a capacity that takes a lot of thinking, a lot of reflection, a lot of experience, trial and error, failure, bouncing back. And nowadays, especially, young people are taking their time about finding their purpose.
So emerging adulthood, early 20s, is kind of when people start to grapple with this? Or?
Well, the actual data are that by age 22 or so, we find 1 in 5 young people fully purposeful. And, of course, there are other gradations of that that are less than that. And between the ages of 22 and 30, we get much more movement up into the close to the 50%. So a lot of the movement takes place in that decade of life between 20 and 30.
So that makes me think, how many people are walking around without a purpose?
Oh,
who are older than 30?
Oh, well, certainly there are a lot of people who are what we call drifters, who aren't even looking for goals, actually. And when Dan started talking about himself, he sounded like a drifter. But I knew that once we interviewed him a bit and once we got him reflecting, there would come out actual purposes. But there are lots of folks who never find purpose. There are folks who find purposes and then lose it. And one of the things that's happened since we started doing our research on younger people is that the field of gerontology has discovered purpose, and they find that folks without purpose in the later years of life are not in as good shape as people with purpose, that purpose deters morbidity, mortality. It is health-associated. If you read Atul Gawande's work, his book Being Mortal, it's full of that. The idea of purpose has really revolutionized the health fields, especially in the older ages of life.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking with Bill Damon today about purpose, finding purpose, knowing if you have a purpose, and the benefits of purpose.
So Bill, I would like to know whether Denise has purpose. Is there are there like one or two questions I could ask her?
No.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for saving me.
Well, you asked me.
We have an extended semi-structured interview that takes quite a while. And it is, I think, a reasonable assessment tool. But it requires a lot of probing. And what we really are after, and the key concept, is the idea of an ultimate concern. So Denise might tell us, well, you know, my purpose today was to find a parking spot on campus. And we would say, well, Denise, and that, by the way, would not qualify as a purpose. But we would say, Denise, well, why did you want to find a parking spot on campus? And that she might say, well, I had to get to work by 9 o'clock. And we would go on and on and on. And eventually we would get to the heart of the matter, which is that Denise really cares about her work as an educator that is concerned about challenging young people in just the right way and not over-challenging them and wants to change the world in her mission. That's the ultimate concern. It takes a while to get there. So one question is not going to do it.
But I did like how Bill got to purpose for me and basically said my purpose. So thank you, Bill. Without even asking. He knew my purpose.
He did. He just looked at you. Look at her eyes. I don't need no structured interview. I can just see it.
Are there? So someone asked me. I think it was Dan when we were prepping here. What can a bank robber have a purpose? Like, are all purposes positive?
Well, first of all, goals that are not what we call beyond the self are not purposes. So if it's all about me, that by definition is not going to be a purpose.
Hang on. You cannot say anything, Denise, about why I don't have a purpose.
I am not. We've already established that you do have a purpose, okay? Bill and I have already established that.
Okay, so
it can't be all about me. It can't be a self about self.
Right. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with goals that that are about me. You know, I want to become happy, or I want BMWs or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying these are terrible things, but they're not purposes. Purposes are they're something that is an attempt to accomplish something in the world beyond the self. And it has to be meaningful, and it has to be something you believe in. So most likely the bank robber is, unless it's that mythical Robin Hood that's robbing the bank to feed the poor or something, who probably never existed, by the way, we would hesitate to attribute a purpose to a bank robber.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're speaking with Bill Damon about people and finding a sense of purpose.
So it sounds like at least at the state of the research, that we don't know what things parents can do to help kids find purpose, given that it doesn't emerge until post-20s, or is that incorrect?
Well, that's incorrect. I mean, we have some very good ideas about how parents can help, and parents don't stop being parents when the child turns 20 either. What we have found, though, is that parents cannot give the child a purpose. That doesn't work. And a lot of parents try to do it. They say, well, you know, your family's been lawyers for five generations, you're going to be a lawyer, etc. That doesn't take very often, if ever. But what parents can do is, first of all, model a purposeful adult to a child. And every young person we have found that has developed purpose has somebody in their life that they've seen that has been purposeful. So the observation of that is important. Parents can provide resources, options, ideas, support for the child's own interests. And this is a little more dialectical, but parents can listen carefully to children and help children reflect and ask children the why question, and even sometimes challenge the kids, because sometimes saying, well, you know, are you sure? Do you really want to be a sauce chef in a French restaurant? Does that make sense? And sometimes when the child has to come back and justify it and explain why, that actually strengthens the child's resolve. So parents can do a lot, but not write the script of life for the child.
That is a really important point, I think. And I think there's a lot of parents who on the one hand, are going to be frustrated by that, and on the other hand, kind of feel relieved that they're looking at their eighth grade son, who looks like all he's interested in is basketball and video games, and say, there's hope. There's hope, right?
There is always hope. As long as the brain is alive, the child can learn.
And you can discover a purpose at any age?
Absolutely. And we have actually follow-up studies that go well into adulthood, and it happens all the time at later times in life.
So the outward nature of purpose is really interesting, that it is not it's okay if benefits to me accrue, but that it's really for the benefit of others or the planet. And that's a really interesting property of it.
And it doesn't have to be altruistic. I mean, we've had, for example, young people who, to give you one example, wanted to be a jazz musician and invent new jazz scales. And his music sounded really weird. And one of the interview questions was, well, what if people don't like this stuff? And he said, you know, I couldn't care less if people like this. I'm doing it for the music. So it wasn't to help other people. But he was definitely purposeful. It was beyond the self. It was for the music.
For the state of the music industry?
Not the industry, for the art or for the form or for to help advance, to make it interesting. But he was not altruistic.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
It is. Yeah. So I'm going to start a topic that we're going to continue. It's a little different. So I don't know if you know this, Denise, but Bill is responsible for a fairly large commission study and on the benefits or non-benefits of a liberal arts education. And, I sort of want to say what's wrong with vocational arts, but I don't think that's really has anything to do with what you're looking at. So say just a little bit about this. We're going to go to break, and then we'll come back and get after it more.
Well, I want to say that I'm objectively studying it, so I'm not trying to prove that liberal arts has benefits. And we're looking at purpose as one of the key variables. And the question is, in this time when people are challenging whether this expensive treatment called liberal arts, where you add a lot of Shakespeare and other things to the curriculum for college students, what difference that makes? Does it matter? And as I said, we are looking very objectively, I hope, at whether it matters at all.
We will find out. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Bill Damon talking about the benefits of liberal arts education and how it relates to purpose next on SiriusXM Insight 121. We translate the research we know about best practices with school, curriculum, and parenting to teachers, administrators, parents, and youth.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. Today we're talking with Bill Damon, professor of education at Stanford and director of the Stanford Center on Adolescence. We're talking about liberal arts, are they worth it, and how they tie to a sense of purpose.
So maybe it's good to describe the liberal arts. So the liberal arts came from Greek society, and it was for the training of citizenship. And
the classical idea of liberal arts is to develop the whole person and everything about the person, including intellectual development, which obviously is what schools do, but also character and spiritual development and sense of self. And I think the 19th century in the American universities, inspired a lot by the British John Cardinal Newman, who wrote about the idea of a university. That's where the idea really took off, and American universities picked up on it in a big way. Now, universities recently have come under a lot of criticism, and I think much of it is well deserved, for getting away from this idea in the classical sense. There may be a lot of requirements to take courses across the curriculum, but a lot of the teaching has been very specialized, very disciplinary focused, and hasn't really accessed the student's sense of why am I doing this, of what does this mean to me, to my life. And liberal arts traditionally, in the classic sense, was exactly supposed to give young people the tools to make good decisions in all areas of their lives. So one of the things that we're looking at is the way liberal arts is being done in a number of colleges and universities. And are there places that are doing it more intentionally, with more wisdom? Are there places that are doing it just as a rote bunch of assignments of course numbers that you take to check off this box and that box? And most importantly, does that make a difference? Because as I said, this is meant to be an absolutely objective study. And when I do research, wherever the chips fall, I report them. So I may have hypotheses about what makes a difference, but we'll see what the results are.
So there's oftentimes you see these things where they'll interview students graduating, say from Harvard.
Right.
And they ask them, why does it get dark in the winter? And the students say, well, because it's cloudy. They fumble around. They don't know. It's because the earth's tilted. Just
thank
case.
You, Dan.
Because
you knew Denise didn't know.
I didn't know. I just didn't want the masses to believe it's because it's cloudy. So, and the implication is this college education, you know, a high school student would look just the same. So what's the value of a college education? And I've always thought that that's a mistake, that the goal of a college education is not a set of facts and skills, although you need a good subset. It's really, if you want to know who's gone to a good college and who hasn't, you ask them to learn something new. And that's where it's really going to show up. And I would think liberal arts would do that. Where do you think the outcomes are going to show up for the places that do it well?
Well, one, it follows directly from what you said, which is if students have learned something new, and of course that's a thrill to learn something new, they'll want to keep doing it. And so one outcome would be that they want to continue learning, that they're going to continue reading books, maybe even taking courses, doing the kinds of experiences that get them a broader sense of the world. In other words, their minds will continue to be alive. They'll be curious. They'll be intellectually excited. So that's one marker,
so,
I think.
So that's interesting. Let's take a top-tier non-liberal arts and a top-tier liberal arts. Do you think the people who go to the top-tier liberal arts like have more, a larger percentage have subscriptions to the New York Times?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, you're comparing one.
What? Denise?
I gave an eye roll that you didn't see, Bill, because is the subscription to the New York Times the pinnacle of education? Is that the outcome that we want everybody to have?
I don't know, but everybody does this around me. They say, did you see that article in the Times the other day?
Gosh.
And I get Sports Illustrated. I don't read, you know.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. And we are talking with Bill Damon about liberal arts education and purpose in life and what you get from a liberal arts education. And I just want to push back on something you said earlier, right, Dan, which is, you know, if it is this idea of how you learn something new afterwards, who's to say that that doesn't happen when someone has gone through a STEM education or a vocational education? How you approach learning something new might happen from any of those, right?
So my claim was that a college education is going to improve your abilities to learn in the future.
Just liberal arts.
Yeah. I'm not sure where I place my bets on the liberal arts.
Okay, so that's what you're asking, Bill.
Yes.
What distinguishes a liberal arts education from a non-liberal arts college education? And that's what you're asking. Okay.
And let me say that you can't figure that out by comparing one institution against another, because within the same institution, you're going to have some people, some professors that do things in a way that brings the students' minds to life. And you're going to have other professors that are much more narrow and uninteresting and unengaged and are not getting the students even to understand why they're taking the course. So a lot of what we will be looking at is not comparing Stanford against Duke or something like that, but rather within Stanford, we're not looking at Stanford particularly, but within whatever institution we're looking at, what's the variety of learning experiences that students have, and what difference does it make? And not just classroom things. We're looking at extracurriculars. A lot of students, the most exciting thing they ever do in college is write for the college newspaper, for example.
I think this is going to have really big ramifications for college choice. And if you think about the pressure around college admissions and the financial fees associated with a college education, I think your findings are going to be really important to show why go to college, period.
Well, it's not just college in an expensive elite sense. We are also looking at community colleges. And a lot of good things happen at community colleges. And we're trying to find out what are those good things and identify them. And my whole approach always is to try to nail down what are the strengths. And even if you can only find them in a few places, and describe those strengths and figure out how other places can adopt those strengths.
And you're using purpose, you said, as one of the measures.
Well, purpose, I believe, and I think my research, our 15-year research program on purpose has demonstrated this, purpose is one of the key indicators of thriving, of a well-directed life that goes way into the future. And so, yes, if students are coming out of an educational environment, a higher education, with a strong sense of purpose or purposes, that student is going to be well-directed. That student is likely to make good choices and do well for themselves and do well for the world.
And live longer and be healthier and all sorts of good things.
That's what I believe.
So they don't use that very often as the outcome of college. Longevity.
You're going to be healthier and live longer
and
do some good in this world.
Well, you never know for sure. So life has a lot of contingencies you cannot control.
Okay, that's fair.
So I know that you're also commissioning other researchers. What are some of the other bets that people are making on this?
Well, there will be people looking at economic outcomes, what environments lead students to better jobs, better paying jobs. Health and well-being is really important, not just physical health, which of course is important, but subjective well-being, sense of satisfaction. There already have been data that show that family relations and marriages and so on are a positive outcome of higher education. So that research has been done. But across the board, we're looking at really everything, and certainly cognitive. Now, some of the early work on cognitive outcomes of higher education, such as Richard Aram's groundbreaking work, Academically Adrift, have not been good news for higher education.
Because he measured facts and skills.
Well, and people do question the way he measured it. But whatever it is, there are data from his studies that have to be answered by people in higher education.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Bill, for coming today. And thank you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.